Hello again, I'm Drew Wilder, and it is Your Business, Business Talk, Straight Talk. We talk with Stan Sadlat, sponsored by Steeplechase Advisors every weekend at this time. And we're talking to Stan because Steeplechase Advisors is independently owned and operated for over 50 years, helping businesses with taxes, insurance, real estate, asset protection, business succession, even personnel problems. And we're talking this week and next week, we're going to talk about security issues and crime and how a business, I guess how you in general, even if you don't own a business, what you can do in this, what I call crazy world. So, Stan, how are you doing today?
Hey, Drew, so when did security start? When did this concept of security come about? When do you think?
A year?
Yeah, or a time
security.
Frame.
A time frame? I don't think I ever heard about security, right? It wasn't referred to as security back when I was a kid. So I'm going to say 1978. 79.
Roman Empire.
Oh.
That's when it went back to when they would have bodyguards.
Really?
Yeah, and bodyguards became very popular, and that was the start of,
wow,
quote, security.
That's
being provided.
And it's still... I'm sure it's changed from then to now.
Right, of course. I mean, over the years, it just developed, and you know, and that's why we have a very special guest today. We have Brian Foley, and many of you may know Brian from a long history with the Hartford Police Department, Fox 61, now town manager of the town of Talon, and who knows what's next.
So welcome, Brian, to it's Your Business. So how did you go from, so you went from police force in Hartford to Fox 61 chief investigator and now town manager of Talon? How does something like that happen?
Well, gentlemen, first of all, thank you so much for having me on air. This is a great opportunity. You know how much I love to be on air with WDRC anytime that I can. So I didn't want to be a cop. When I got out of college and just, you know, I took the test to make my mom happy. My father and grandfather were both cops, and it just, you know, the Hartford Police Department made the mistake of hiring me back in 1994, and I ended up getting lucky on a lot of things and jumping into homicide and major crimes investigations and some internal affairs after that. And, you know, when Pedro Segarra became mayor, he then hired Chief Rivella. The two of them were very influential in my career and allowed me opportunity to, one, really be out in the community, out and about in the neighborhoods. And that's not just a talking point. It was such a great part of my career. I didn't hide in the cruiser. I didn't hide in the station. I was out and about. And from there, the media stuff just kind of started to develop as I took over major crimes. And they would ask me to talk to the city, talk to the state, talk to everybody about certain things that happened, and at the same time maintaining confidence in the safety and security of the police department. And, from there the media stuff started to grow, and from there the political stuff started to grow. And as opportunity had, when I retired, Fox 61 offered me a position over there. It was fantastic. It was a year, but prior to that year expiring, my former chief, now Commissioner Rivella of the Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection, when he got hired by Governor Lamont, he reached out to me and said, contract up, can you come over to the state? Which I did. Jumped over with him for 3 years, and then over last summer I was approached by some people in Talon saying that the town manager job was open and asked if I would apply. And I did, and I was very fortunate. Very happy to be back in the town that I grew up in, the town that I have a daughter in the school in, the town that my mother lives in. I currently reside there, and I've been basically a taxpayer there for much or not most of my life. So it's a town that's very near and dear to me. But I still miss my friendships that I developed in Hartford, and still try to maintain a close relationship with so many of them.
So three very different roles, but 1994, so you started in the Hartford Police Department. If you were starting today, I mean, is it the way you hear it through the media? Would it be like a totally different type of job that you'd be doing? Is crime that bad?
You know, it comes in waves. You know, when I got on in 94, to have 50 homicides in the city wouldn't be a shock. I remember they had started the grand jury stuff back then and some of the federal stuff and going after the gangs. People kind of forget that. And, you know, we got homicides down in 2016. We had 14 homicides, which is the lowest it's ever been since we've been tracking them. But, you know, administrations change, you know, both politically and within the police department, and things change externally and factors change. And, you know, they had a pretty bumpy year this year, unfortunately. But there's a lot of factors. The job, Drew, I got to tell you, when I got on in 1994, people said a lot of the same things. Why would you ever want to be a cop right now? The job's changed. It's all this community policing stuff, and you shouldn't be a cop. It's horrible. And, you know, it was the best thing I ever did. And I, you know, I have to tell people, you're hearing, there's people saying that to people that now that they don't want to be cops. We heard the same thing way back when. You know, we hear morale's down in the police department. Well, I challenge anyone, anywhere, to name one police department anywhere where they're going to say morale's good at any point ever. Yeah. No matter where you are throughout my career, there's always people in the police department that are going to say morale's at an all-time low. That is a guarantee. So it's a great career and a great job, and I don't regret one second of it, and I sign up to do it again.
Well, things always look different in the rearview mirror.
So Brian, in today's world, as a small businessman, when I say the word security, you know, I'm really looking, I think, at three different things, and correct me if I'm wrong. One is your outside physical plant security, your inside security for your employees, as we all know what happened with the Budweiser distributorship.
SDI.
Okay. And then the third one is more internal, and that is cybersecurity.
Yep.
You know, how do you protect, you know, what you need to within your computer systems, your phone systems, et cetera, et cetera. So when you look at today, after all your years of experience, I mean, really, what should the typical business person look for today? Should he have cameras? Should he have security systems? Should he have bodyguards? What should he look at?
Right, because when you're running a business, I would think like you're like waiting for something to happen.
Running a town is exactly like running a business. So I had to deal with all those, the external, the internal, and the cyber. So let's start with the most important thing to any business owner, and that's their staff, the people that work for you and protecting them. I always like, let's say staff within a building, you know, not to talk about drivers or anyone that's external, they need their own protections as well, but internally, you want that building to be a good hard target. When I say hard target, doors that are locked, doors that need to be buzzed in, windows that somewhat create some privacy but also protection for those inside. You want video. You want them to have panic alarms. And this is something when I got to the town of Holland, you know, our security wasn't the greatest. And we're not a town of great means. But we're adding panic alarms for, you know, someone that came to me and said, you know, the gals in the office at night are somewhat concerned, and the tax offices and such. And we want them to have a one-button, push-button call to basically our resident troopers, the troop C barracks within town. And, you know, you want your employees to be able to contact emergency services as quickly as possible. And, you know, 911's great, but if you're under fire, and you have a cell phone and you're trying to turn it on, put your code in, or have it get to your face and dial 911 and touch the right buttons. We've seen that fail a lot. So we like the law enforcement. You know, I came from Department of Emergency Services and Public Protection. We like the one touch, and that's for businesses, that's for schools. That's an immediate connection and not a lot of room for error. So you could say with those one touch systems that there'll be opportunity for false alarms. Certainly. Those false alarms, especially like within the school system, happen, but they're good opportunities to train. And you know, you want to communicate as soon as possible that it's a false alarm, but and how everyone reacts to those things are good opportunities and times to learn. Interior-wise, you want cameras around. You want alarms. You want software built into those cameras to, you know, to notify you when things happen when nobody's there. You've got to have a vigilant system of ensuring that doors are locked, ensuring that when someone is separates from the company, that the locks are either changed, or codes are changed, or key cards are programmed, those types of things to make sure that no one nefarious gets access through those means. So it's you got to stay vigilant as a business owner, protecting your employees and looking at all those things. I mean, that's your most valuable asset. Valuables, anything that Burt with breaking and entering, again, it comes down to alarms, it comes down to lighting. Video is not overly valuable unless there's software built into it to act like an alarm. It's great for the cops afterwards to do the investigation, but even then, it really creates a time and a pattern, as opposed to rarely do you look at a video and say, that's somebody's face and I recognize them. Where are the videos? They're 10 feet above ground, looking down. I like how today some businesses are putting cameras at different levels, not necessarily over the head, but at lower than eye level, somewhat hidden, or not obvious, not these conspicuous cameras. So getting the camera system, being creative with it, doing something different, I think is a good idea as well. Cybersecurity, there's you better have some. There's certain steps that you need to take in order to get cyber insurance, and that's that double authentication and some of those steps that you need to take to be insured against cybersecurity, depending on what type of information you're protecting. You look at some of the ransomware out there, the money that you spend trying to fight it and to get your information back is exponentially more than you could have spent on defending it. And the money is much better spent up front in cybersecurity as opposed to doing things afterwards.
So Brian, I was reading that 84% of all worldwide businesses have been hit with cybersecurity issues.
Yeah, never thought it was
They've
that
all
high.
Been hacked. And 46% of all small businesses have been hacked.
So the town of Tallinn has taken some hits and attacks. And while they're happening, they're being mitigated. We are very lucky to have very strong, we share our cybersecurity with the town of South Windsor together. And we're very lucky to have a very strong cybersecurity. And everything's backed up, and we have a backup system should something happen. But to this point, we've been attacked, not to the point of a loss, because of good planning, good cyber policy. And again, our cyber insurance company has certain levels of defense that we need to have in order to maintain our insurance.
And that's how prevalent it is. If a town like Tallinn can get hit, I guess anywhere can get hit. And again, we're talking with Brian Foley, who is with us, with me, Drew Wilder, and Stan Sadlak from Steeplechase Advisors. We'll tell you, by the way, at the end of the show, in about 14 minutes, how you can get in touch with Stan to help your business, whether it's security or any other aspect, and we'll tell you how you can get in touch with him with a no-fee consultation. And Brian Foley with us from former police officer, Hartford, Connecticut, chief investigator, Fox 61, now town manager in Tallinn. And are businesses aware of the severity of it, and do they have the resources to be able to do all this to protect themselves?
That's a great point. I assume you're talking about cybersecurity at this point.
Really, all three, because you don't really see you don't see security guards at most businesses unless it's like a big chain,
right? So
or a bank.
I think everyone's aware of security to one degree or another. I don't know of any businesses that aren't. Mm-hmm. Sometimes your smaller mom and pop operations might not have the cyber security needs or even protections that they should have as much as possible. A good police department, like we have the resident troopers in Tallinn, they're stopping the businesses, they're doing a check for them, they're walking around, they're telling the businesses how they can improve their security, and that's always great to have those relationships, and the cops should do that, obviously at the schools and the churches, but they do it at the businesses as well, and that business owners are appreciative, because they're paying a tax in town just like everyone else, and they're entitled to have the law enforcement come in there and give them some assistance as needed to develop security.
And are they doing anything about it? I mean, do they get the security when you recommend
they're
it?
They're pretty good about it. Unfortunately, a lot of times they're definitely more likely to react after a crime has occurred. And again, sometimes the insurance companies, depending on what it is, are going to want them to increase security. Obviously, coming from Hartford, we've seen every type of robbery and burglary you could possibly imagine, and a lot of lessons learned and developed from there. But encouraging your local law enforcement to get out of their cruisers, go up, meet the business owners, and offer to walk around and just give them some ideas. And most cops when they stop at a business, are just going to start naturally looking for the weak points and telling the owners how they can strengthen them. And you know, that goes back to, again, lighting, and cameras, and locks, and different types of security measures. And, you know, and there's environmental things you can do, the way you plant the shrubbery and the trees and those types of things that can either invite crime or disinvite it. And so also so many different things to, and cops get that training. Cops actually, part of their training is how to help business owners make sure, and homeowners, make sure their houses are more secure.
So, you know, in your particular town, the highway runs right through the center of the town. So you're very susceptible to people, you know, stopping there and trying to do break-ins or whatever nefarious items.
Auto theft, car brakes, the catalytic converter.
Yeah, as you can say, that's the big one I hear about.
I remember when I lived in Tallinn that, you know, one day I happened to stay home, and I don't know why, and I had, at the time we had four dogs. So all of a sudden, like at 10:30, the doorbell rings. And I'm saying to myself, okay, so I go out and there's a white van pulled into the driveway. And out of it, five guys come. They're, you know, not from the United States. They come up and I answer the door and they're kind of surprised to see me. Meanwhile, I got my dogs barking like
all
mad.
All four of them.
And I said, what do you want? Oh, we're here to paint the doors. I said, what are you talking about? And so they said, sorry, must be wrong house. So they got in. So I immediately called the resident state trooper's office. And I just said, hey, listen, I want to give you a heads up. I don't know what this was all about, but this is what occurred. So the light went on in my head saying, you know, we're right here along the highway. You're very susceptible to break-ins or to robberies. So you have to be a little more vigilant than you are in many other places.
Right? And that's what I was thinking, too, when you said is be vigilant, not just on your own property, but your neighbors. And that's for business owners and homeowners. Look out for each other and keep an eye on everybody. You know, in Tallinn, we're lucky. Like you said, with the highway, you know, coming right through the center of town, cuts it right in half. But we have not only do we have some great resident troopers, we have Troop C. Connecticut State Police Barracks, right in town, right off the highway as well. And we have a lot of cops that live in town. So we're lucky to have a lot of police presence around. So if someone is to get off the highway, there's a pretty good chance they're going to see a cruiser fairly quickly in the town of Tallinn, which makes it, you know, a great place to obviously live and a very safe town.
Interesting. Now, you mentioned a lot of police to help protect the businesses and homeowners. And so I met with a police department, my normal weekday role when I'm not playing radio host, is marketing. So I was meeting with a police department that was really desperately looking to hire police officers. And I said, how big is the need? And he says, well, let me tell you this. When I started in 2000, I think it was 18, just a few years ago, we had 4,000 policemen, applicants to work here. And it was one of the not bigger areas in the Hartford area, but a moderate size city. And I said, so what do you get now in a year? He says, well, last year we had 300.
Yep.
So what do you do when you don't have enough police officers? I mean, maybe you're in better shape in Tallinn.
So let me just cover this. My test for the Hartford Police Department in 1993 was at, any guesses, the then Hartford Civic Center. Is where we had it. So many people took the test back then. And absolutely, we started to watch this over the last, you know, I want to say 10 years, maybe not that much, 8 years or so. And you started to see those numbers plummet in Hartford and in every other department as well. And then you start looking at the people, our people in town, and the cities applying to be police officers. And that number was low. There's just so many factors, and there's zero doubt in my mind what's going on in media has caused a lot of the negative effect. Look, kids are different today, no matter what, and it's a different kids are raised differently and brought up differently, and I'm not sure everyone wants to be cops anymore. I can tell you, you know, in the 90s and the early 2000s, there were fights in the locker room over overtime between cops. Wow. You know, and it would be ugly. Now they can't give the overtime. Right. And all the police departments have overtime, and the younger generation doesn't want to work that overtime, and they're loaded with it. So we can blame media to some degree for this, but it's also a different type of culture. We're raising a different type of child and with a different type of work ethic. And you know, it's one of the greatest challenges of every police leader out there now is how are we going to get applicants, good quality applicants, in the door and also maintain their morale where they want to stay and be cops. Because right. A lot of cops are leaving the career, not just having trouble getting people to apply, but with cops leaving as well.
Right. And this city was saying, well, we'll take anyone without, I mean, even if they don't have any experience, and we'll train them, put it through our test. And we start the test every time we get 20 applicants. But I guess I could be a police officer. But, I mean, it's just, I was shocked how big the need was, and I'm sure the media has a lot to do with it. But I think as Stan and I talk here on It's Your Business, we've talked many times till we're blue in the face that people just don't want to work in general.
Yep.
But when it comes to a police department, I mean...
Well, I think it's even worse by the fact that they now have personal liability. I mean, as a police officer, you can be sued.
Well, and I know that was a big talking point in the media, and that's another one of the things where, you know, they're not necessarily helping the thing. That bill went through, and police accountability went through. I don't know of one, not one, zero cops that have had that happen to them. The only way that would happen where you'd get sued and be held liable if you did something so out of the line and illegal that they would actually go after you personally. And that's the only way you would not be indemnified. I don't know of one, not one case that that's happened to.
Well,
you heard
surprising.
All the screaming.
Yeah.
And I believe a cop should be indemnified by the city for doing their job. It's when you jump out of the color of law, outside of your job, that's when you're liable and you should be. As a resident of the town that I'm in, if a cop is violating crimes while working, I believe there should be some liability there.
Now you got the dash cams too, right? So everything's on film?
Everything changed with that. Yeah, the body cameras and the dash cameras, you know, everything has changed. I think the body cameras have done incredible amount of good for police.
Yeah, are you going to say the opposite?
No, and clearing. Look, they've shined a light on a lot of things that are bad, and the cops are just getting better and better and better at their jobs. And you know, everyone blames the cops for everything. At some point, the cops are going to get so good at their jobs, and they're getting there now. They're not going to blame the cops anymore. And you know, who are you going to blame then? And I have watched this happen. Whenever something bad happens in society, the cops are the first to get blamed, and then the teachers are shortly thereafter. And so you'll see that coming. And it's, to some degree, the education system's getting attacked now, too. So if you're looking for the cops to solve society's problems, you're way too late. But the dash cams and the body cams, I think, are a good thing. I would have loved to have had one in my career. Just to one, because it's just the truth. Whatever it shows is the truth, and that's what happens.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I wouldn't want someone knowing everything I do all day in my work day.
Well, not everything, but, you know, every call that you go on.
Yeah, I guess if you're a police officer, it would be different.
That.
But I know companies do that. They track every mile you do and where you are. And
So are the towns having a difficulty finding enough people to be firefighters, to be the first responders?
Well,
because there's a shortage in many towns.
We have it in Tallinn, and we have a partially full-time fire department. We have 6 firefighters and a couple of supervisors, and then we also have a volunteers, and both are down. Getting applicants to be a fireman in the town of Tallinn, what a great gig. I mean, what a great job that would be. You'd think you'd have, you know, for one position, you'd think you'd have 1,000 people applying. Well, that is not the case. Again, And there's no bad PR and no bad media about firemen. They're just always a media win and a PR win for everybody.
Right.
Everyone loves firemen.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've stood out of a lot of scenes and watched my cousins in the Hartford Fire Department go into a burning building and say, I would love to be a fireman right up until now when we have to go in the burning building. Mm. That's horrifying. So, but yeah, they're having the same challenges. You better believe it. In fact, we have meetings coming up on getting more volunteer firefighters to come and join our Tallinn Volunteer Firefighters.
So why do you think people don't want to volunteer to do that? Or,
you know, while I am a sociology major, I'm certainly no sociologist or a psychologist. I don't know. I think it comes back to we're raising a different generation of people. and a different generation of workforce. And again, how do you not want to be a firefighter? It's a great gig. And I don't know. I think it's a lot comes down to how we're raising our children.
What if you had, in the final couple of minutes of the show, one piece of advice for, I mean, we're a business show, but for business or people in general, what they should know that they probably don't know to protect themselves, crime-wise, security-wise?
Have a plan. Always have a plan for when something happens. And that goes for schools, churches, businesses, and homeowners. And have a plan for when something goes. And okay, we're not going to live in a fortress here. We don't want you to have a fortress. Some businesses have cash, and they have to protect the cash, and they have safes, and they can have certain alarm systems. I get that. But always have a plan, and if something bad were to happen, go over it in your head, go over it with your staff, and drill for it. Look, at it, even the schools are doing active shooter drills now. They used to do, schools do fire drills. You know, when's the last time a school caught on fire? It's been a long, right.
We used to do that when I was a kid.
Of course, and now that now they're doing active shooter things, unfortunately that happens at a much greater extent than a fire drill.
When you were a kid, Drew, you used to have to hide under the desk.
Well, there were dinosaurs. I would stare out the window at the dinosaurs running around.
Well, they had to because of the you know, the Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah,
had
exactly.
To hide under the table.
Right.
You do have a couple of gray hairs.
There you go. Stan Sadlak, Steeplechase Advisors, Brian Foley. Wow, that went fast.
That's great.
Brian, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we'll talk to you again. And Stan Sadlak from Steeplechase Advisors. It's Business Talk, Straight Talk. It's your business, whether you're a business person, owner, whatever, whether you're a consumer, which I assume you are. Stan helps with taxes, insurance, real estate, asset protection, business succession, even personnel problems. Now, Stan, you're offering, what, a no-fee consultation?
Yes, but everyone.
Okay.
Out in radio land. Brian's going to be with us on next week's show, too. So we're doing two shows on security.
Two for one.
So don't forget to listen next week for him.
Part two.
And if you want to talk to me anytime, well, give me a call at 860-524-3408.
860-524-3408. And there's no charge. It's like no fee consultation.
That's
like
correct.
A no-brainer.
Be happy to talk to anybody.
Yeah. Why would you not call Stan? Drew Wilder, we'll talk to you next time. Thanks so much for listening. The show is sponsored by Steeplechase Advisors in Hartford. Have a great weekend. You better take care.